It may be the world's 9th largest country and the epicenter, the absolute homeland of all apples globally, but only recently has Kazakhstan started a culture of cider making. And on this episode, we hear from the couple that is getting it going at Apple City Cider in Kazakhstan. Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. If this is your first time listening to Cider Chat, well, I'd like to say welcome, and wow, you hit on the perfect episode to begin your journey out and about into Ciderville, because we're going to be speaking to the Thomases, who started the first ever cidery in Kazakhstan. And that's a big deal, because Kazakhstan and apples are like two in the same. It is where all apples in the world originated from. There are wild apple forests in Kazakhstan, and there was a Silk Road in Kazakhstan, which was a huge trade route. If you go back to your history books, right, a huge trade route where the apples were brought and then, you know, brought out into the world. And also, we could also thank the animals, the different beasts like bears and birds for eating apples and then, well, you know, bringing the seeds through their defecating, if I may say, and helping to germinate apples all over the place. But just think for a minute, wild apple forests. That's not an orchard. That's like sequoias only, you know, in a giant forest, only in this venue, apples. Apples everywhere. It's just almost unfathomable because there's no other place in the world where there are wild apple forests. So until you see it, it's almost like hard to believe it, right? And it's two different types of apple varieties. You know, the OG apple is a wild apple, and it's called Malus cerversi. And the apples that you and I have in our kitchens and that we eat and we go to the different orchards, wherever you are in the world, is Malus domestica. Malus domestica originated from Malus cerversi. I mean, think about it like we have dogs that are now domesticated, but their OG is wolves. You know, they were from that thread, and then slowly evolution took place. It's just so cool, and I'm totally thrilled to have Aijan and Alex Thomas of Apple City Cider in Kazakhstan. So get your glasses ready, and we'll be heading to that featured conversation soon. But first, a wee bit of news from out and about in Ciderville. The American Cider Association has a call for proposals for CiderCon 2023, which will be held in Chicago. So this is a great opportunity. If you have a topic that you're passionate about, or maybe with a team of people that you're passionate about, and you want to get into a conference that really is all about educating, networking, connecting people globally, and certainly in the U.S., then do check it out at ciderassociation.org. And I have a couple ideas. If you've been liking to think, I don't know if this is really important, first of all, try. Why not try? Because if not this year, maybe it'll allow you to hone that topic for next year. And it's all about sharing what good news you have on the topic of cider, fermentation, and orcharding. So some topics that I think would be really cool to cover, and I know a lot of listeners out there are in this field, which is biodynamic farming. And that's like a whole system approach to farming. You know, you have a leaf day, you have a root day, you have a flower day, and a fruit day, which is absolutely critical for orchardists because it's all about the fruit, right, when it comes to cider. Another topic could be wild yeast fermentation. This is always a really well-attended workshop when anyone is talking about wild yeast because we're learning to kind of hone the terroir of the different regions. And it's nice to kind of pair that with both wild yeast and cultured yeast. Sometimes folks work in unison with both. In fact, many times people do. So that's a great topic to jump into. And then also on opening a cidery. or scaling up. Let's say you opened a small cidery and now you are moving your production into a larger scale production facility. What works? What didn't work? What tips can you pass along so that all of us can be working together? And in the end goal is to have really good cider out there that everyone wants to keep on talking about, and helping all the cider makers all rise up and elevate this craft together. You could get all that info about CiderCon and the American Cider Association by going to ciderassociation.org. And I'd like to tip my glass to the American Cider Association for being a patron of this here podcast. You too can be a patron by going to the Cider Chat Patreon page, which is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Google it, Cider Chat and Patreon, and become part of the community that helps keep this podcast on the air. This coming September, I am attending and actually leading the French Cider Tour to Normandy and Brittany. And if you check into the past couple episodes, I've been featuring a number of conversations or stories about the producers that we will be visiting, because we begin in Pays d'Auge, which is really the premier apple region for that area, because they are really focusing on only distilling apples for Calvados and for cider, of course. And then we move down to the southern part of Normandy to a region called Domfronté, where the giant ancient Peri pears reign. They're over like 300 years old. It was really quite a sight when I first beheld one of those first Peri pear trees that was of that age. In fact, the first time I ever did it was with Eric Bordelais, who many of you, I'm sure, do know of. He brought me and the nose out to this little grove of Peri pears that he works with, and I just had to run up and hug one for a while. You know, just kind of feel like the heartbeat of a tree like that. It is like hugging a sequoia tree. It's just, whew, shivers up and down my spine. And then we'll be heading into Brittany, first with a little stop at Mont Saint-Michel so we could walk about there, I'm sure drink some Calvados at the Mont, and then have dinner overlooking Mont Saint-Michel as the sun is setting, which is, you know, one of those bucket list, definitely bucket list things to do in one's life. And then heading down to Saint-Malo, which is a harborside city, having a little bit of downtime there, and then visiting some cideries, having some galettes at a cidery, the Ciderie Pré. And then we'll be heading back into Domfronté and visiting the Pacari family. And if you are on Facebook, I want to recommend that you check out the Cider Chat Facebook page. Do like it. Please follow along. And there you will see a video from Pacari. You'll have a nice bird's eye view. It's a, you know, they have some overview looks of the orchard there and the actual family themselves. Just a few nights ago, I had a cider from Domfronté. It was a poire, I should say, not a cider. And it was from 2015. I didn't read too much about it. I know I had gotten this bottle. I brought it back from Cider Expo. And I opened it, we tasted it, and I was absolutely floored. It didn't have all the kind of spiciness that poires often will show in the glass. It was deeper, more richer in a way that just blew my mind. And I looked at, you know, I said, what is the percentage of this poire? And believe it or not, it was 4% alcohol by volume, which also blew my mind. It blows my mind every time I'm in France and we're drinking these low ABV ciders, which makes it really nice to do a cider tour, because essentially, you know, at the table that night, everybody said, well, I could have had just one bottle of that and had no problem, which is kind of true. You could drink a 750 ml bottle by yourself at 4%. My goodness, that ain't bad. Not that you need to, but, you know, I mean, just so much fullness in one glass of cider. And it's not leaving you loopy, which is really a nice thing when you are biting in that way. So I cannot wait to get back to France, to Normandy, to Brittany, taste these really complex ciders and be able to enjoy them on the bus. And after hours, you just could really dive in 100% and not have to worry. I mean, that, I want you to think about that for a minute. having been in the drinks world for a while, that is something to consider. And that is one of the reasons why I love going to this region. So again, you could check out the Cider Chat Facebook page. Check out the video of Pacari. They have amazing ciders there and Calvados and some other specialty products that they have. And if you want to sign up for the tour, there are only two spaces left. I'm sorry if you're listening to this podcast after June 15th. You could always contact me. We'll have a waiting list because things happen, of course. So, up to June 15th, go to ciderchat.com and look for the Totally Cider Tour page, and you'll see all the links there about the French tour. Goodness, abundance for all. That's my cousin bringing us into Strange Apples, a song that I wrote and he and I sung. And last week I had as a trailer leading out of episode 322. And thank you for all the folks who kind of let me know that you really enjoy the song. You never know. You know, I'm kind of playing around there and kind of making a little bit of a tease around Strange Apples because people don't really understand about apples and what's going on there. And this here episode, we're bringing in a whole other level because you have been tasting and eating Malus domestica, but I'm pretty much guaranteed by saying this that probably only five people out there maybe listening right now have tasted Malus subversi, which is the wild apples. So that's where we're going to go to next. We're going to be talking with the Thomases, both Aijen and Alex Thomas of Apple City Cider, and hearing a little bit about their backstory, what it looks like in Kazakhstan, and what you could expect by visiting there, and a little bit about the future of Kazakhstan. I want to just give you a little heads up before going there, because there's a couple things that were mentioned. One is we referenced a documentary a couple times, and that is a documentary that the Thomases have produced, and it's called Ciders in Kazakhstan. And you could find it on Vimeo. I have an actual link at the show notes. You could check that out. It's 2 hours and 13 minutes. So it's a three-part documentary that is being honed down now, or has been honed down, into a one-hour documentary. It's going to be on Amazon Prime. But in my mind, it is worth checking out the three-part long documentary. And I'm also really excited to look at the one-hour documentary, too, and how they honed that down. As a producer and editor myself, I just love that stuff. Something else that you should know as we're moving into this episode, Aijen will be mentioning Caucasian oak. And what she is referencing there is the mountain range, the Caucasian mountain range, which is between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. And so that's where they are bringing the oak from. So they're really trying to keep it as local as possible instead of, you know, importing oak from around the world. Really cool stuff what they're doing. I'm so excited for them and really excited for all of us to finally bring like the center of the universe for apples forward. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Aijen and Alex Thomas of Apple City Cider in Kazakhstan.
We're in Almaty, the city of Almaty, the former capital of Kazakhstan. It's a city of just under 2 million people down in the southeast of the country. So we're just along the border with Kyrgyzstan and China. We are 3.5 hours drive from the nearest border crossing with China. There's this dry port called Horgos, which is where all the goods come through. So the Chinese rail system is different from the European one that we use here. So they take all the containers off the Chinese trains and then put them onto the trains here. If you were to fly over the Tian Shan Mountains here, you'd get to Kyrgyzstan. So Kyrgyzstan is, it's a tiny little mountain kingdom, and that's between Kazakhstan and China. So, yeah, at some point, Kyrgyzstan stops and the border with China starts directly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm imagining if I was where you are located right now, I would look out. I'd be able to see mountains, perhaps Whitecap Mountains. I don't know if this time of year you would have.
Yeah.
Okay, Whitecap Mountains, pretty large mountains, and then a very flat type of plain area in the surrounding, you know, close to your home, and then it rises up. Is that a good guess of what it looks like?
Yeah, I think if you were looking out of an airplane window, that could be what you see, precisely what you'd see.
I think Almaty is unique in that sense, the city where we are. So, I mean, historically, it's a tourist destination. It was built as a resort city. And then because of its proximity to the border with China and Kyrgyzstan, the capital was moved to the central city of Nur-Sultan. And Almaty has remained the financial and cultural capital of Almaty because of all the opera houses and theaters and things like this. And then obviously 20 minutes away from the city center, you go into the mountains and you can ski and everything is the ski resorts there. So I'd say it's unique in that sense, nature-wise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, corresponding with Alex back and forth prior to this interview here, it does sound like a country that's a bit like the Garden of Eden. You have the you know, the apple. It you know originates from Kazakhstan, and the country itself, all the different things that it offers, it just sounds absolutely amazing. So that sounds like a good representation of it. So let's start with actually the name Almaty.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
So Alma-Ata means the father of apple. So it's basically the city of apples. And it's obviously because, I mean, it's when the city was built, I mean, the whole area was just apple wild apple forests and apple orchards. And I mean, hence why it was built as a resort city. I mean, it was only designed to have 500,000 people before. And obviously it grew so much more. And yeah, so it's, that's why it was called the City of Apples or the Father of Apples. I waffled there a bit.
Yeah, because it has changed. The name changed.
Yeah, so Alma in Kazakh means apple, and then Ata means father, grandfather. But to make it, I guess, more easier and international, they've united it and it's called Almaty.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes it.
And it's just, so there's two camps that are still against it, and they're saying it should have been Alma-Ata with a hyphen in between. But then there's others saying it's more modern and it's easier. So,
well, I appreciate knowing this because it actually gives a little bit of a gender to the apple being grandfather apple. Yeah.
You know. Well, actually, Alma is the name of a woman, a lady's name, a girl's name.
Okay.
It's a very popular name, Alma. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful name. But, you know, it's, we always kind of wonder, okay, we provide, you know, a certain kind of gender to different plants and trees or even planets, right? So the grandfather or father of the apple. It's very, very cool. So here you are, you're in Kazakhstan, and I'm going to bring us back to your cidery. The two of you are from different countries and you came together.
Yes.
You're like, you're an international couple, right? Alex, you're from Western Europe, right? You are from Kazakhstan. You are
originally
from the country that we're talking out of now. You came together and you landed into, you know, Kazakhstan, a really kind of amazing story just there.
But in terms of returning to how Apple City Cider started, it obviously, going back to Alex and I met in 2011. And surprisingly, we actually did meet sort of in Almaty because he was here on a business trip. And I was leaving to do my MA in London. And we met on the plane from Almaty to London. But he did see me first at the airport here in Almaty. I think it is sort of symbolic. And then we started talking on the plane, we hit it off. And in 2012, we got married. And in 2013, we moved to Kazakhstan to make cider, basically. I think that's if you put the story short. So first I gave him a book called Apples Are From Kazakhstan, I think by a British writer. And then that's how I discovered that apples were from Kazakhstan from that book. And then he told me about cider, which I have never tried before because there was no cider in Kazakhstan. And then he asked me, so, you know, how come you guys don't have cider? You haven't tried cider? And I was like, no, what is it? Blah, blah. And yeah, and we tried it in London, in Europe, basically. And I really loved the drink. And then the idea was, well, I guess we have to make cider in the birthplace of the apple.
And what's unique to the situation is that you have the wild apples. You don't have Malus domestica, as we are used to working with in other parts of the world. You have the wild apple, which is Malus aversi. Here you are, you're in Kazakhstan, and you're, as far as I understand, in 2022, you now are actually packaging your cider. Is that true? Has it been packaged? Is it in bottles or cans? What can we expect?
They're in bottles. They're in 750 milliliter glass bottles. We want to put across to people that, you know, cider is made like wine. I mean, there's not much sort of culture or cider culture here, or understanding of what cider is for the vast majority of people.
Is it a cork or a cap? How are you capping?
It's a crown cap.
You have your one style that is now currently out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're making and what's on the shelves, or is it out on the shelves?
We're only selling in Kazakhstan at the moment. We're selling currently in three cities, about to be four. We're about to start selling in the west of Kazakhstan soon, in Atrau. But we sell a sort of very fresh and fruity, acid-driven style. That's quite similar to a lot of high-end ciders in the US and in the UK. I've started to see ciders like that in France too now. There's more acid-driven ciders that are sort of less tannic. In a culture like this, it's what people want for sure. And generally, I think that cider is what's most consumed anyway around the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking to you, a connoisseur, and you know, a lot of people that listen to your podcasts are connoisseurs, enthusiasts, or from the industry, either apple growing or cider making. So yeah, it's those sort of people that want something, you know, a bit more tannic and complex. And we are making something for you guys too. That's currently in oak barrels. It's gone through a malolactic fermentation, and that's maturing. It should be ready for bottling. I haven't tasted it in the last few weeks, but yeah, it should be ready for bottling sometime in April, I'm guessing.
But the cider we're currently selling, clear, crisp, it's sparkling. I think my friends, I mean, people here are really loving it. It's sort of a substitute to Proseccos and that sort of sparkling wines. And people are really taking pride in the fact that it's made in Kazakhstan. And it's not just, you know, a wine with no history, that there is that sort of background to it. And a lot of people are discovering that apples are from Kazakhstan because local people don't know that. Some local people, well, majority of local people don't know that. And so they really love the story. And yeah, I think it's really working very well.
Wonderful. So I'd like to get a couple of the specifications on this particular cider, the first release. What is the alcohol by volume for that?
6%.
6%. Okay. What would we have on the label? And is there a name for this cider?
Well, it's called Almaty.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. Lovely. You have a 6% cider. It's a sparkling cider, right?
Yeah.
And I imagine it's not bottle conditioned, right? So you did like a forced carbonation, or am I correct on that?
We were thinking of doing Charmat for a while, but we do a forced carbonation instead. It's not bottle conditioned.
Well, there is also kind of bureaucratic reasons for that in terms of the excise tax and things like this, because there's bottle counters and things like this for the tax departments. So it's in terms of creativity, I mean, there's a lot of space to do that.
When you decide to do something, you've then got to think how you're going to get around all the bureaucratic hurdles.
Yeah. I mean, they're very accommodating, but we're having a lot of changes with legislation moving away from the way wine was made in Soviet Union to the way it's made now. So a lot of winemakers and breweries are working closely with the government to create new legislation to accommodate for all these new styles, basically, on the scene. Mm. Yeah.
Yes, doing bottle conditioned or pétillant and naturel is going to be something for the tax authorities to consider and scratch their chin and think, oh dear, how are we going to do this? Because for it not to be a button that you press, it then be filled into the bottle and then be labeled, and that be the end of it, was already a very strange concept for them. And then the thought that it might not be finished in however many months. And also the fact that it's not going to be labeled then, it's not a finished product. What happens if bottles pop? They really don't like bottles popping. Only a certain amount are allowed to pop.
You are pioneers in a country, it's an interesting situation. Here you are in the land where the apple originated from. And from what I understand, there's no history of cider making in Kazakhstan. So you're absolute pioneers there. And you are dealing with the government, as many people do, in terms of getting them up to snuff on how to manage that on the tax place. Mm-hmm. It's a very typical story that I hear from many folks worldwide, especially as, different countries that haven't really had cider making before are actually dealing with that. So there's no surprises there. I think the white elephant in the room is that you're in Kazakhstan and you're making cider. I mean, how cool is that? That's what everybody's like, yeah, everybody's stoked hearing this right now. And so the pressure is on, obviously, to make something that you could feel like good about. And I think it's absolutely brilliant that you went for the first style as something that sounds like it's really approachable, right? It sounds like that was a really good business model right from the gate. Make something that is going to be doable, not high alcohol, easy to package, and relatable to everyone. And then you step it up to the next level and have working with barrels. I mean, bringing in barrels to your area, that's kind of like a big deal. It's not a really large wine producing region, right?
No, not at all. There are, a few wineries. They range from some that produce some quite decent wine to others that produce what really wouldn't be called wine in other parts of the world.
Very English understatement there, but yes.
I should probably explain a little bit more about that. So when the various departments, health and safety and tax, were checking out our factory, we got to the end and they said, but where is your ethanol storage facility? Sorry. they said, yeah, because we're going to need to
give you permissions to have a tank with ethanol
and put all sorts of seals on it.
Yeah.
It was, oh my goodness. Why would we need ethanol? We make cider. Right. Yes.
Well, wine. Basically, the idea of the fermented natural wine is they were like, well, but most of the wineries have ethanol facilities because you mix ethanol with the fruit juice and then you get a wine. I'm like, well, that's not how we make. They really love the fact that we don't have an ethanol tank. It's less job work, less work for them.
Oh, goodness. Wow. That's like over the top a little bit, for people to kind of wrap their mind around. But once again, here you are, pioneers. I mean, you're making history in Kazakhstan, and really bringing it back to a real amazing place for the country. I'm sure there's a lot of pride in that alone.
It's very true what you're saying, and we're often having sort of very fiercely proud people coming up to us and just saying, you know, thank you for coming here. Thank you for doing this here and making such a business.
Yeah.
And it's usually quite young people. Quite often it's guys saying that most of the time. But, you know, females too. I mean, they'd really like the cider. But I think there's a certain sort of level of, you know, patriotism among sort of young Kazakh men, sort of seeing, you know, this product, it being called what it is and being made where it is.
And also the fact that it's a production process, it's not an import business. We're not buying something and reselling it. And, you know, and I mean, this is all great, but the fact that we're doing something with a local product, we're giving the farmers use for this apples that they thought maybe they can't use or they can't sell because obviously, you know, if we're using cultivated varieties and stuff. And then just generally the area where we are, just the suburbs of Almaty, people have, you know, I don't know how to say this. A lot of the times people text me and message me and say, it's so nice to have something like that appear on the scene in my area because I'm from here and you're not just buying the land and selling the land or doing just an orchard even, you know, because a lot of people have orchards there, but you're actually taking and making, you know, making this business of where you know, using this long production process and bringing the equipment and bringing the expertise, basically hiring people, giving people jobs and creating something in the end that they can touch and they can be proud of and they can gift it to people and stuff like that.
And, if you think about the history of the creation of Kazakhstan after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, it's not that long ago. And all the sort of sensible things to get a country, you know, going and its economy going are going to be involving, you know, exploiting its mineral resources or sort of widespread, large-scale agriculture because Kazakhstan's got so much land and so few people. You know, and those were very much industries that were already done under the Soviet Union. So everybody already has the equipment, knows what to do. You know, it was very profitable. So that's what made sense. And there isn't so much of a history of consumer goods here in the country. You know, of course, you know, there are some and it started to happen. Yeah. But
I know that I'm excited and I don't even live there.
Thanks.
And I know I'm not alone. So here you are in the land of the apples. I mean, it's just it's amazing. I'm really curious about, and I know I'm not alone, on the apples that you're actually using to make the cider at Apple City Cider. And I'm wondering if these are different. Are there names of the apples that you're using? Are these names that you're making up? Because you're using wild apples. And I just want to give you a little bit of a, you know, maybe kind of what perhaps many of us are thinking, that you're going out into the wild apple forest and bringing in apples. But that's probably not what you're doing. Or is there a relationship with a co-op? Or, you know, and maybe that's the wrong word, of bringing apples in. Where are you sourcing your apples?
Yes and no to going into the forest. I mean, the sort of purest areas of the forest where we went to in the documentary, they're totally off bounds. You can't go in them without permission. You can't take apples out of them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
They're natural reserves. So,
right.
So there are other areas where trees just grow wild, and that's usually on somebody's land. They'll be owning this land, and they'll have some people in to pick the apples. We can buy from those people. We have some of our own trees as well. Those are all Seversi. We, at the time of the documentary, we put an order in with a nursery. So yeah, those trees are growing up fast.
From so Kazakhstan, a nursery in Kazakhstan?
Yeah, locally in Almaty.
We were the first people who wanted to grow Seversi apples. So they were like really surprised. They're giving us all the different types of cultivators, saying we can do this, we can do that. And we're like, no, but we want exactly these ones.
Although some people were using various different types, like the Niedzwiedzki that was grown for ornamental purposes and things. So that,
yeah.
I mean,
People use wild apples, like one among the cultivated, because it protects from the diseases. It's very, right. The properties of apples are, yeah. So that's sort of, but that's the only way that people view them.
So yeah, among commercial orchards, there would always be a Seversi tree at the end, thinking that would help protect from diseases. So they would be growing in nurseries and in orchards, and you can buy them from them. So
do these apples, must be a catalog that you ordered from. What are the names of the apples that you're using? Alex is shaking his head right now. No.
I just want to say Alex used to go around trying apples, and then the person would be looking after them. Alex would be very cleverly asking, so what are the chemical properties of the apples? Do you have a list? And then this person would be like, 50% sugar, 50% honey. That's what I can tell you about.
50% sugar and 50% honey. That's an interesting name for it.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's basically, going around tasting apples, and people will just be calling them Ditchka.
Which is like a wildling, like a wild apple.
Just means wild apple. So, I mean, they're all Seversi. I mean, there's various different types of Seversi. It's just a case of going around seeing what is good, what you like. Yeah, I mean, the Institute has been cataloging things and has a list of different things that it calls different varieties. I mean, they have one called Asgar and various Cassia.
Cassia, okay.
Cassia. So we've planted some of those, but then it's a mixture of that using our own and then, getting things that we find. And we also, for our local variety, I mean, we blend in, culinary apples as well. Because in the birthplace of the apple, there's a lot of orchards, and apples are not a problem here. It's not a problem sourcing apples.
Right.
So yes, depending on what style we're going for, for the Almaty classic variety, the fresh and fruity acid driven one, we'll blend some culinary apples into that.
Yeah.
So what I saw in the documentary is there was a sense that perhaps the wild apples wouldn't necessarily have tannin in it. But it appears that as folks are walking around and grabbing different apple trees on the hillside, and, there's Andrew Lee tasting an apple and going, well, this would be fantastic,
yes.
Or Peter Mitchell, you had Peter Mitchell, Claude Jacquelet, Ryan Burke, and Andrew Lee in your documentary called Ciders in Kazakhstan. And so there's a sense for me thinking, wow, here you have this whole array. It's like a candy store of apples, and, the sky is the limit, and these are all wild apples. So my question for you is, like, moving forward, as you are planting your own orchard, I imagine next to your cidery. Is that something I can assume is next to your cidery? So you're planting an orchard, and you also have an abundance of apples to work with. You do have the opportunity to really make these very complex ciders that, as you said, Alex, that someone like myself and many listeners would be like, give their right arm to be able to work with, those type of apples, and of course taste. So as you're moving forward, I'm wondering about your business plan here. You started with a very approachable cider. You're doing this barrel aging cider. What is your grand scheme for Apple City Cider, and maybe not the grand scheme, but maybe the 5-year, 10-year model of incorporating this amazing story of Kazakhstan and the apple, and the opportunity to have such a wide variation of you know, apple varieties that have yet to be named and may never be named, except that beautiful tree over there.
In terms of what we want to do culturally, our vision for cider here, I mean, first of all, we'd like for people, whenever they hear the name Kazakhstan, we'd like for them to think of apples. With the quality of some of the Seversi, I mean, there is the potential for Kazakhstan to, and the Almaty region in particular, to become, you know, a cider region of the world. You know, there's the apples here, you know, to enable it to, you know, become... I don't want to name all these prestigious cider regions and then say, you know, we're going to be as good as Asturias or the West Country or Brittany and Normandy, but, you know, there's a lot of potential here. And I know, and you look at the fact that the Hudson Valley has grown up and become a world cider region. That encourages us.
I just saw you shrug your shoulders, like, why not, right?
Exactly. I
just did that, you know, while Alex was talking, like, why not? Why couldn't it be? And I actually want to echo that. Why not? I mean, not to put more pressure on you, but that's my expectation here, is that you're creating a legacy now for the country. It may require more cideries to be there too, which I imagine, you know, it becomes the mecca that it should be, obviously. So I think without, you know, that is without a doubt, I think everyone's expectation here, and it's not necessarily the expectation on you to do that, but I think there's a lot of hope to really showcase, because we all feel connected to the apple, you know, in all the different origin stories and, you know, in school and whatnot. But in the cider community, there's a connectivity, and it's so critical. So I think you provide a lot of hope here at a stage for cider in the world right now.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say so, Rhea. It is a massively exciting opportunity, and that's why we came. I think there's a lot of expats that have, you know, thought that, you know, this needed to happen coming here. Why is there no cider?
Every expat person we spoke to, usually English or French, would be saying, it's so amazing you're making cider. We've always said we wanted to make cider 10 years ago, and then, you know, but we always just talked about it. Mm-hmm. Done it. It sounds like boasting. I'm not. I'm just...
No.
Well,
it's okay.
Well, they investigated it a bit. I think what probably happened is they investigated it a bit, realized the bureaucratic headache it would be, and weren't crazy enough to start it. But we probably had enough screws loose.
I think the fact that I'm local and I'm used to dealing with the administrative, you know, hurdles and the bureaucracy, and the fact that Alex brought the expertise made it sort of perfect to doing this, you know. So I think that's why. And it's just the story behind it. And I was happy. He was really taken with the idea. And Alex always was saying it will either be a vineyard or in France or a brewery in UK. And I think the fact that he always wanted to make, so, you know, something, a drink, a fermented drink. It only was natural that he married a girl from Kazakhstan, and we came back to my country and started a cider.
Right. I mean, it was destiny that brought you together, destiny moving you forward. I mean, you know, it's a story. It's absolutely beautiful. I love it. So I'm going to bring it a little bit home here to the apples again, and the fact that you're dealing with the wild apple, different than the apples that the rest of us deal with and make cider. Is there anything unique to that process of working with Malus Seversi, the wild apple, versus Malus domestica? I know that malic acid could potentially be high in the apple, but at the same time, after watching your documentary, I was like, well, that didn't seem to be a problem at all. Maybe there was some myth around working with the wild apples that you are slowly removing the myth, that they're very approachable and the sky's the limit for working with them.
There's over 200 varieties of the Malus Seversi. And I think about 46 were cataloged and sort of planted and things like this. And so they're extremely different. I mean, this, as you say, the sky is the limit. That's the same with mouse diversity. Some are super tiny and very tannic. And actually, the unique thing is that they drown like pears. They don't float like apples, which is really strange.
And not all of them.
Not all of them. Some of them, yeah. And then, you know, yeah. Some, there's a lot of pectin. Some, there's, yeah, they're very different.
There's just such a huge variety. Acid levels, sugar levels, tannin levels, the size of them. But aside from that.
Some of them ripen from the inside out. Is that true?
Yeah, we saw that, Andrew discovered that in the documentary. So yeah, you were finding quite a few unique characteristics in them. It's just largely been a case of finding things that we like that are probably unnamed, and I think at some point it would be nice to graft those onto some rootstock and, you know, start planting them ourselves in our orchard and then start naming them. But yes, we haven't got to that extent yet. Although there are some that we don't really know what they are that we could yes. probably name.
Are you able to do that, where you're able to go out and take clippings of scion wood and to do grafting? Is that doable?
Yes, and we have done that. And yeah, to be honest, we haven't got around to naming them yet. There's just been so much to do.
Could only imagine.
That yes, naming our trees actually hasn't been the number one exciting thing, which is probably sounding like absolute heresy to some of the apple growers listening to your podcast. Making and bottling cider was the priority. The orchards and other part to it. But you know, that's going to come fully online in the coming years. So it hasn't really been our top focus at the moment. All the trees are planted there now. At some point we'll put some grass in between the rows, and then we've put a sprinkler system and stuff. But I think that's something to focus on in the coming years and name some of these varieties as well.
Mm-hmm. So if we were visiting Apple City Cider, is there going to be a tasting room on site? Is there a tasting room?
At the moment, it's an empty room upstairs, a massive one that's called a tasting room. But yeah, it's going to be a tasting room.
Okay.
We've allocated for it.
Right.
The walls are painted, but that's about it.
It's just whether we're actually allowed to have it in the same building as the cidery. We're exploring that.
Yeah. Right.
There's a professional kitchen next to it. But that's also a question of, can we have a professional kitchen next to it?
Within
the factory or not.
The actual cidery building. So, yes, that's going to take some time to resolve. And again, it's a question of focus.
So
we've built a little chalet on the land as well, and that's a separate building. Occasionally, when we've had a very hard day at the cidery, we might stay there overnight. We tend to have guests round there and tend to do meals and functions in the chalet itself. It's very, very pretty log cabin, and there's the mountains behind, and the trees are directly next to it as well. So
the tasting room is empty, but there's a tasting house, and that's fully furnished. So you're always welcome.
I'm there.
<It's>,
Let's back up a little bit and look at the production facility. So you have the chalet that has it's like the tasting house, which I love.
Yes.
and then the actual production facility, I saw that you're breaking ground for that in 2017, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
And so
yes, that is correct.
Now it's completed. So give us like the size of that. And also I'm curious about the equipment, but let's start with the size. How big of a production facility 1,200 square meters.
Yes.
Okay. And I see that you're using a pneumatic press.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you brought that in from, I just want to give them a little nod, which is Schrammel from Slovenia.
Yeah.
You're working with them. They actually help sponsor this podcast. And when I was talking to Jan Schrammel, he said that they were doing something specific to the Pneumatic Press, and I know, Alex, we talked about this via email, but I just wanted to follow up while I have you virtually in person. Because of the particularity of working with the Malus Cerversi, that they did something to just tweak it. Is that true with the Pneumatic Press?
I didn't really know. I meant to email Jan what he meant by that. I'm not entirely sure what he might have done. So if they have, I'm afraid I'm not actually aware of it. He suggested that we went for a pneumatic press, and if we then wanted to put it into a stop it being a batch process and be a continuous one, that we could get others. Because obviously it was a toss up between that and a belt press. But I mean, mainly we went for it because we were just very impressed with Jan. Price seemed good. They seemed, very hardworking, very honest. And actually, out of all the manufacturers we've ever dealt with, Jan has been the only one that's been 100% accurate in what he said.
Always available to help if there's any issues. That was invaluable.
Really nice brilliant people. It's a family-owned company, which speaks volumes to a pretty cool story. So you have the pneumatic press and the tanks. What kind of tanks are you working with? Are they variable tanks, like a wine for making wine, or?
No. We've got a pressure. We've got two Speedel tanks. There's a pressurized one and then a standard fermentation tank. They're very good pieces of equipment. Very impressed with how well made they were. A few funny hiccups when the salesperson that we've been dealing with decided to send them off to Kazakhstan without any documentation whatsoever. To our flat. So
that's one of those international things that kind of happen. I know. I get it. Yeah, it happens.
So that involved turning the trucks back round and getting them resent. They're impressive piece of equipment.
What about the barrels? Are those being brought in from a specific region?
Yeah, from the Caucasian oak.
Oh, okay, thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
So I think that was also, Alex wanted it to be from the area and not use the French oak or American oak, but something that was sort of local, sort of from the area, because it was symbolic to use that with the apples here as well.
But the fact that they're from... I believe they're from a tannery in Ukraine. That's going to be an issue for us getting some more.
Let's go to yeast. Because talk about terroir. My goodness, you have the potential to like blow terroir out of the bottle, no doubt. But I'm going to assume here that you're starting out with cultured yeast. Is that true?
Yeah, we've been doing both, actually. We've been doing some wild ferments. We did some trials, obviously. I haven't put the yeasts under a microscope to see if they're similar to the yeasts that would be on the skin of wild apples in the West. I'm assuming they would be. And we have done some wild ferments in increasingly large batches, and they've worked out pretty well. But yes, also doing cultured too. The Almaty Classic is largely cultured, and then the Almaty Export, which will be what will, we'll make more tannic and more complex. It might just be entirely wild. It might be a blend.
No, it's not really fair, asking you some of these questions, because you are just recently getting cider in the bottle. So just to let listeners know that this is really new. And as we revisit this again in like a year or two, I'm sure it's going to be an evolving story. So that's fantastic. I wanted to just give folks an idea. So if they visited Kazakhstan, would they be able to visit Apple City Cider at this point? Or at what point would you be welcoming tourists at that level?
We were hoping to, from this year, with the pandemic being over, the restrictions are largely lifted. And, you know, people are going for visits, you know, now, you know, in the way that was happening before. But, you know, obviously with the, you know, events of January and, you know, the ongoing events, you know, in Ukraine.
I think what I'm getting out of talking to you both is that, and just following your story a bit here and seeing your documentary, is that there is an awakening that has just recently taken place. And I think that's hard for us to fathom, because you think, okay, well, the Apple originated from Kazakhstan. I mean, that is its homeland. And then it traveled along the Silk Route and from animals and went around the world. And now we have all these different apples worldwide. And it's the king and queen of the fruit kingdom, no doubt in my mind. But now I know it's the king, actually. So I'll go with that. And so there's like a rediscovery, and I think that's really poetic and something to not be ashamed of, but to really say, you know, of course that's happening. You know, sometimes it takes us a while to realize what's in our own backyard. And yeah, here you are, and you have this amazing opportunity to bring that forward. So I really want to wish you the best of luck with all that. I could tell it's a work in progress, as expected for a new cidery, mm-hmm. and that you are taking the steps that really make sense. And I have absolutely no doubt that you're going to be absolutely successful. So I'm going to wish you luck.
Very, thank
you.
Very kind. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks. Now I'm going to cry.
Hey, you know, I mean, that's what the Apple does to us. Oh, I can see all of you out there in Ciderville right now, your little thought bubbles. I hope I have a glass of wild apple cider from Apple City Cider. And you know, I have to agree, that's exactly what I'm thinking too. So we'll be looking forward to staying in touch with the Thomases to see what's happening as they're moving forward, getting settled into their new cidery, and as the country itself begins to embrace the fact that they are the OG for everything that has to do with apples in the world. Really a remarkable position to be in, and one that they should be boasting about far and wide, shouting it from the Tian Shan mountain range. Yes, you are number one. And before I roll out of here, I just would like to announce that next week I will be on vacation, so you won't have episode 324 until June 22nd. So in the meanwhile, check the back catalog of Cider Chat. There's over 320 episodes, or any one of the social media channels. Cider Chat is on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cider Chat, Ciderville. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rio Wind Caller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!